Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Welcome to Slam Fire Radio, episode 576 for October 9th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Adriel.
I'm another one of your hosts, Dustin.
I'm another host, Kyle.
Oh, I'm Kelly.
And last but not least, I am another one, Trevor.
I thought we were in a regular rotation from 5 years ago.
I thought that we would just go, well, Adriel was, and then on my camera, it's Adriel. And, right? Just keep going around. Yeah, Hefe jumped the queue, skipped over Kelly.
We haven't totally
confused her.
Yeah. I mean, I've been getting that a lot. I'm getting in trouble for reading the show notes. So,
there's your first mistake.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it was a pretty typical Slamfire startup. But I'm glad not much has changed since last time I was here. It's same quality I left behind, carrying on the standard. Good job, everyone.
Pretty much the same. Yeah. But Trevor, why don't you start us off with what you did Gens this last? What was the last time you were on? 6 months ago? A year ago?
Yeah, yeah. not a whole lot. I went to the shop a couple of times to hang out with Denis at DC Armory. He's basically closed up. He's finishing up projects for customers, and he's taking on some work. He's in a position now where he can pick and choose. He's got a regular day job, so he'll only do, like, for example, I was working on getting a stuck choke out of a rusted duck gun. Like, he's like, only because it was here for a while, otherwise I'd never take a job like this again. Those are the jobs that when you're a full-time gunsmith, you can't refuse, but you absolutely hate because they're a time suck and you don't make any money off them. So now he's just doing like jobs that pay, like refinishing jobs, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Evenings and weekends. I was in there recently to fix a shotgun for somebody, and he gave me a hand with that. And then I went to the range to double check the scope on this Savage Model 111 that I took moose hunting. And I want to make sure that the hand loads that I made for it were still hitting where they were supposed to. I'm glad I did, because it was 3 inches left at 200. Not that it would have mattered too terribly much on a moose. Like,
no.
We'll talk more about moose hunting distances in New Brunswick later on. But anyway, I did that. And other than that, it's been mostly archery since my I started back in archery last year, and then my back went all to crap. And I got drugs injected into my spine, which was fantastic, so I could walk again. Yay.
Yeah.
And
is that Prolo?
What's that?
Prolo therapy?
No, I got a cortisone shot.
Ah.
Yeah. It's my third one. Yeah. So so I got back in archery, and shortly after I got back in archery last year, my back went out. And then that led to some other stuff. And then I got the cortisone shot and spent the summer just kind of not doing much because I was living on the cortisone kind of thing. And now things are kind of good. So I'm back in our archery again until for a couple of weeks. And then I'll be off for a couple of weeks. And then who knows after that. I'm getting a new SUV, so I'll be going back into the woods again for hunting and going to the range and stuff like that. So that'll be good. So that's about it. Just a little time at the shop, a little bit of archery and coaching, shooting, and then moose hunting. Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yep.
Dustin, what about you?
Weirdly done a whole lot with guns, but I managed to make a range trip last weekend. my the Vortex sight on my handgun has a mind of its own. It's got like the shake wake thing, and it's annoying because it takes like 8 hours to turn off, and so you never actually know if it's turning itself off or not. But it's also just hard to turn off on its own. I don't know. The settings are kind of weird. I managed to sort it out, I think, but there's a lot of lots of futzing. Got my PC9 dialed in, so I could potentially go shoot another competition if I feel so emboldened to do. I've been slowly influencing a friend of mine from Edmonton, actually, to get a 1022 because he's got the Wildcat. And outgrown it. I really wanted to get want him to get into Maple Seed. He's interested, so probably be sending him in y'all's direction in the near future. Yep. Yeah, been trying to. I don't know. He has no centerfire rifles. He keeps talking about this 243 that he's interested in, and I'm like, I don't know if that's the right gun for your first gun, but what do I know? And then, yeah, I'm doing concepts right now because I've got some, like, unabused Glocks that I think I'm going to abuse with some random Cerakote colors. So I'm kind of playing around with some options right now. And, I was thinking about, other than that, getting out of guns and getting into RC, so I figured it was a good week to be on so I could, have a talk with the master.
Oh, stop it. Bullying is not going to be tolerated.
Well, you're going to go away next week, so it's okay. I'm going to bully you some more when you can't respond. It's going to be better knowing that you listen.
Oh God. Well, yeah. If I make it through, I'll get back. Yeah, I'll respond. All right. Remember, I know where you live.
Not anymore. Not anymore. I've moved a couple times since you've been there. I live in a mansion now. It's great.
Oh, nice. All right.
Yeah, you have no idea. It's
sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, when you come out. But that's more or less all I did. I spent most of my last 2 weeks with a staple gun, so building props.
Cool.
Who's next?
Whoever you want to be next.
Kelly, what'd you do?
So I spent the weekend in Ottawa. I was at 2 Maple Seeds, and then I also did the USA Ladies Day on Saturday. So I cloned myself. No, Saturday morning, I went to Stittsville Range and helped Greg Weiss was the street boss, so I helped him out, set up, attended part of the Maple Seed. Then we went to USC, had 80 ladies come through for the Ladies Day there. It was a lot of fun. I was on the pistol table, believe it or not. So we had a revolver. I had my Shadow 2 as well as Smith & Wesson Victory. So it was really easy to shoot. The ladies were all excited. We took some great pictures. I still haven't posted them yet. I should do that. The other thing that I did was, as I said, on Sunday, it was a doubleheader. So we had all day. We were at Stittsville again. Great range, by the way. We promoted a couple of new instructors to full instructors, which was super exciting. And then on Monday night, had a shoot boss call with Adriel. So we were wrapping up the year. It was exciting to talk about all the things that are going to be happening in 2025. Looks like we're going to be doing some winter seeds in Ontario. We still have a couple more events that are happening that we're actually still even posting on our website too. So look forward to doing that because we're going to do a little bit of traveling still in November. So it could be interesting considering. In December could be interesting with the snow. But last night we had She Shoots, and so we were doing that. And we had Chloe Gagnon again on. She came back after the Olympics because she is the mental preparation consultant. And we wanted to talk to her about what happened in preparing mental management or in coaching on how to actually take your game to the next level. And then also
just Kelly,
everyday people.
That's
Kelly.
Yeah, I think that's Kelly. Failed.
Who Kelly, are you're breaking up. Just blinkers and setting goals.
Kelly, you're breaking up.
We loved having her back on again. So if you're looking at how to...
I'm just gonna
Yeah, just
Kelly, I'm just gonna mute you for a second because you're breaking up. And Kyle, why don't you go next?
Okay, game, go and watch.
Actually, it won't let me mute her because her connection's so bad that I can't mute her.
Oh,
I can remove her.
Boom. There you go.
she's still here. She's still here.
You did what you had to. I mean, it was improved the timeline.
It was a good podcast that she did, by the way. I just finished listening to it.
Kyle, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I can go next.
Maybe Kelly, once your internet's back, we'll get you back in the rotation.
So, got some new mags come in. I ordered some extensions, and the extensions were for Glock mags, so figured ordered up some new Glock mags. So, got these Taylor Freelance extensions on...
It's doubled your capacity.
Yeah, on 33-round Glock mags, so...
Yeah.
That's a 20-round extension.
Is stupid.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, that's a 20-round extension, and then I got the 30-round extension.
Heck yeah, you did. Oh, that's good. I need a couple of those. Yeah.
These are.
What's the spring pressure like when you get down to the bottom?
I haven't figured that out yet, but Uplula, well, it's a Glock mag, so Uplula is a necessity.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But super easy to install. The backplate just pops off, and so getting the spring in there and everything is just super easy.
I'm assuming
easy.
There's a backplate on the bottom of the extension as well.
Yes, there is.
So, okay, you take off the Glock back plate, slide the extension on, then put the spring in through the bottom like you normally would.
Yeah.
Giddy up.
Yeah. So.
Whew. So what's it like living with all of that freedom?
It's pretty nice. I'll admit that.
I'd be broke as shit. Like, oh my God. You can buy all the things.
Yeah. Well, not all. Well, I have to figure out if I can get all the things yet.
Okay.
You should be able to.
Hey, I'm starting to think after doing more research that I could do tax stamp stuff.
But, yep.
But yeah, so I gotta get these out. Like last night, I went out to the range and did some testing on the short stroke kit and sighted in the new optic and just tried that out a bit. And so far, I'm liking the optic. The parallax, yeah, it's there, but it seemed pretty good. Like I was getting good groups with it. Real super easy to sight. Both eyes open. And since Trevor wasn't on, I picked up this Athlon red dot, the PCC. Nice. A nice big window, super bright. Not an issue seeing the reticle on it whatsoever.
Sorry, so, who did you say makes it?
It's Athlon.
Athlon.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, what is this? This is a Midas LE Gen 2.
Okay, what kind of reticle? Just a straight up dot or?
It's got a dot or... circle, like a 60 MOA circle with like
little
your crosshair hatches.
Okay, so kind of like a Neotech.
And then a dot with the circle. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So either like a Neotech or just.
Yeah, dot. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Neat.
So, and I'm running with the circle. I really like with the circle and the dot.
When you switch reticle, does your point of aim, point of impact change? Do you have to re-zero it?
I haven't tested that.
Okay.
I don't intend on changing the reticle. After this weekend, I'll probably test that just to see. I know the parallax was rather surprising, and I got looking at all my other dots, and turned out my cheapest dot I own is the only one that didn't have any real parallax. So, you know, my EOTech...
you're all zero magnification, yet you're getting some kind of parallax.
Yep. As you move behind it,
right,
you can see the deflection.
Okay.
In that. So, but the short stroke kit was working really well. I was just trying to get the buffer system tuned, the roller delay buffered system. Got that done. Did some hyper slow mo video on that. But as soon as I got that tuned, I started opening up a little bit, and it kind of exploded or whatever.
Couldn't take the abuse.
No. It throughout when it was just like single shot, check the video, you didn't even look like anything happened. But as soon as you opened up on it, it did. So I half expected to. So I printed another one with the gap, but with 100% infill, And then I just filled in that. So it's just basically the base piece. So that's just solid plastic. So that should not come apart. And I'm gonna playing with more infill on the actual bumper. Because I think I did this one at like 25% infill. Just hoping I could run as little infill as possible just so it was more spongy. But it didn't take the abuse either. So I had started before the show, but I'll continue it after the show. Printing another couple, I'm going to do 50% infill. And then if I have to, 100% infill on that.
So, are you printing PETG or just PLA?
This is TPU.
I was going to ask, like, that should be what you should be doing that with.
Yeah, this is TPU. And then for these pieces, it's ASA.
Okay.
So these pieces should be, now that there's solid infill, they should be strong. And, if I have to go 100% infill with the TPU with the bumper, that's fine. I was hoping for a little bit more sponginess. But yeah, when that exploded, it got stuck in the buffer tube. I'm really surprised by how thick the end of the buffer tubes are. I thought I could get it with the little pinhole that was in there. No, needed something bigger, so drilled it out a bit more just so I could punch it out, because it wedged itself in there when it kind of expanded. But yeah, so I'll hit the range again tomorrow night and test out the new short stroke kit. And you could tell right away, because it was nice and steady, and then once it gave for one, it went to bolt lock, which it doesn't do when it's fully functional, and it just started jumping like crazy. So so it was that was cool to see, like, because I started shooting, like, why is it bouncing around all of a sudden? And empty the mag, put it down, and look, why is it at bolt lock? Okay. So, yeah, test that out tomorrow night. Hopefully it goes good, because I have New Mexico sectionals this weekend. So I'll be leaving for Alamogordo Friday night after work. And then, so 12 stages between Saturday, Sunday. And yeah.
Cool.
I'll probably print up a bunch of these, because it should last a stage. And then I'll be at least, might have to... As I develop it more, might have to just change it out after every stage.
I'm going to be like Devo and tuning your stuff in between every stage.
Well, if I have one of these for every stage, then at least I know I'm good on that stage. And then afterwards, I can do more development for longevity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't want it to change in the middle of the match.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's going to break apart tomorrow night, then I'll probably try and spend a little bit of time just retuning the roller delay buffer, see if I can get it tamed out down without that. But with this short stroke, like, look at the video. Holy cow, is it? That bolt is fast now. I know I sent you guys a video. I don't know if you noticed. Like, that brass is just sitting right here by the time the next round is chambered and ready to shoot.
It's quick, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That is... Oh, I've been 3D printer's been going like steady now. I print in a bunch of Gridfinity stuff to start organizing my toolbox, my gun.
Oh, I need to do
storage.
That.
So
cool.
So yeah, I have a whole stack of the plates. Now I just gotta figure out what I'm gonna do for bins and everything. So yeah. That's that. Kelly, you wanna give it a go again?
Sure, I'll unmute myself. Where did I leave off? Or was anybody listening?
You were talking about the mental training person that you had recorded with, I think.
Yeah, so so cool again, y'all. Yeah, so it sounds like that was essentially where we ended up with today, because that was last night. So if you are interested, go and check that out. She Shoots, episode 33. We're already planning next year, so it'll be 4 years. Wow. But Chloe Gagnon, fantastic. Love having her on. She's young and nice, and she knows what she's talking about, improving, you know, your shooting and your game and work-life balance, and I hate her. But yeah, that's everything. So... Adriel, did you talk about what you did in Guns This Week?
Not yet. I guess I'll go next.
Yep.
I went to my parents, so I didn't go to, didn't do too much over the weekend. I forgot to mention, I went to that three gun match. I had a bunch of, sorry, Trevor, everything's about 3D printing these days because you can do so much. You know these ELS clips that you can get with, you can buy them from Safari Land for $50.
They're expensive.
For just two of these sets.
Or you can print one that'll last three stages and break.
Nope. I've rolled over it and I ran it in a match and it was great. It was just being able to pull because these are typically right in front. It's a pain, like having your belt on with this amount of like junk in the front there. So,
junk in the trunk.
Junk in the
front.
No, in the front. In the front. Yeah, the old appendix carry. But yeah, no, they ran great. I'm really happy I did that. Mag Dump had a big sale on 223. What was it? 64.5 cents after tax and shipping for. This stuff is battle packs from what's the Korean one? PMC battle packs.
Huh.
And I was like, well, I could use a couple more doesn't hurt, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I got 1,000 of that and it showed up like the next day because the retailer's in Edmonton here as well. So that was kind of cool. And I was like, oh, now I need more stripper clips. So, you know, I kind of wanted to try the plastic ones too. So I ordered the Cro-Mag stripper clips. Those are those plastic ones. And I also ordered their loader to compare, you know, maybe the strip loader isn't all that in a ball of wax. So yeah, I ordered that. We'll see how that goes. I went for a range visit on Sunday evening kind of a thing. Just to try out the hunting rifles, see if they're on or not. My hunting rifle was not on, which was weird because I'm using the same ammo and I don't use it other than for hunting, but nope, it was a good 3 MOA to the left, which was really weird. I should probably just swap the scope on it. I have so many nice scopes that are sitting on the shelf over here and I've got the crap package scope on there just because I'm so lazy. I should probably put a good scope on there.
Absolutely.
Trevor, I heart shot a deer at 300 last year with that crappy package scope on that package rifle.
Right, but you took it out this year and it's off. It's shooting 3 MOA and you got better scopes. Come on, fix yourself.
No, yeah, 3 MOA off. The group was good. It's not where I wanted it to be. But yeah, I've got better scopes and the better clarity would be nice. So I should probably do that.
Anyway, we'll come back to that. Ask me about people who weren't prepared when we get to the main topic.
Yeah. What else I shoot? M1 Garand. I shot my 300 Blackout, which it's on. It's good to go. Good to go for this year's hunting. And my Gray Birch stock finally shipped, so woo-hoo! Looking forward to that. That's that one I'm going to put on that 1022. Yesterday, I put this on the Slamfire Discord. Iron Guns had the TM22 Standard on sale for outrageously cheap. I think I paid $220, all it taxes in, shipping in, all that kind of stuff. It came today. So like practically overnight shipping. This is the TM22. So the other TM22, the non-standard, is nicer and more expensive.
What is this hanging off the front?
Oh, man, look at that.
Oh my God. It's like a pellet guns with the same kind of crap hanging off the front. What is that thing?
Look at this.
It's
spring loaded. I think there's a screw right there that you can like use to like change your elevation on. So the front sight's adjustable.
That's shameful.
The rear sight on it is atrocious. It's right here. It's got so much gap on either side. I don't know why. It's like really weird. Yeah. The light on both sides of the blade is outrageous. It's so weird. Everything's plastic. If you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, plastic. Everything's plastic except for the bolt and the barrel.
Firing pin,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. Extractor. Extractor is probably
The bolt
and
parts.
The ejector are probably all metal. Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, do they have, I think the spring in here is probably metal too. Perhaps. Maybe. I didn't look in there though. It's
3D printed.
Maybe look in there, it's plastic.
Did you say how much it costs?
$220. I think for the price, a Savage 64 is a better built gun, and that's saying something.
Ooh.
That is.
Yeah.
And what's a 1022 going for these days?
Like 350, 400.
Okay.
Yeah.
I still take one.
Yep.
Over two of those.
Yep.
But what if you're doing PAL courses and you don't really care? Because actually, that's like, true. Having people load the rotary mags, they're kind of confusing for them. That's loading fair. Like a single stack like this, it's easier. Yeah.
That's fair.
The only thing I don't like is the bolt hold open relies on the magazine. So when you pull the magazine, it's just holding on the follower. That's it.
At least it has a bolt open, though.
Yeah. Oh, and a swappable charging handle. So right or left hand. I like that.
Oh, I do like that. That's a good feature for a $220 gun.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some weird things on this gun though. So like, I think this is like the base model and they took features out of it. Like there's a hole for a sling swivel right there. Oh, it's kind of hard to see, that slot there. That's for a sling swivel to go on the back there on the side here. This is where you'd put like an adjustable cheek rest, right?
Wow.
So it's got all these parts that are like made for something else. I haven't figured this one out. There's a big like gap right in here. And I don't know why. It's unrelated to. There's actually plastic underneath there, but it's like I think maybe they must like want to sell like a red dot or something like that.
Yeah, like, it looks like it's for a red dot.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, maybe.
It actually almost looks like the cutout for the built-in physical sights for like the X95, the ones that like flip up.
Yeah, maybe. I got a picture here.
Whatever it is, we can all agree it's horrible.
Yeah,
it's some here, feature that won't make sense when you do the thing. Correct. Oh my goodness! Are those 3D printed sights?
No,
no. I think 3D printed sights might be better, but they are adjustable. The rear sight is adjustable for windage, and the front sight is it? It looks like it is. Jeez, it might not be. It must be. I don't know. I don't care.
The focus is on the wrong one. It's supposed to be on the front. What's going on?
Sorry, no, it should be on the target.
Oh, sorry, Ben.
Yeah, it's the front sight is absolutely atrocious. Why? I don't know why they didn't just like omit this and just be like, nah, buy a red dot or something. Like, skip all this. Skip it. Just go with a steel barrel. Just, you know.
Got to include some kind of basic iron sights, even though they're not iron.
They're not iron.
They're plastic.
220, it's going to come with basic plastic Bobo sights.
Plastic iron sights.
Horrible plastic.
There you go.
Is that Dustin you're showing us?
The pop-up sight.
Yeah, it is.
How convenient.
Oh, you're muted. Like, we can't hear you. That makes more sense. Okay.
Yeah, it looks just like that. Like it's a pop-up sight. It looks almost exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know. It's
still horrible.
I'm not approving of it. I'm just saying that's what it looks like.
Very good. Okay. Maybe.
Didn't say it was a good feature, just identified it as a feature.
The takedown on it's not bad. It's got some weird things like action screw comes out, action comes off. The trigger group is held onto the receiver with two bolts that go into nuts that are in the plastic. Like there's no steel in here. They embed the nuts in the plastic, and that's what you screw into. Don't go too tight.
You have me a tension screw. It's like
okay. Part of the disassembly. If you want to get the recoil spring out, you have to drive this pin out, and then this cover comes off, and then the recoil spring comes out the back. But that pin is like it's going into plastic.
Interesting.
I'm sure you can drift that out tens of thousands of times, Adriel, without any issue.
No damage, right?
No.
No. No. Anyways, yeah, that'll be a neat PAL gun. And then the other thing I did is I Mad Maxed my motorcycle. I'll show you guys what that is. Okay, this is just a mock-up. I'm not actually going to use like a tarp strap the way that this is showing here. But,
nice.
I like it.
I want a way to take.
No, I think it should be left just like that, including the slack.
Yes.
What could go wrong?
Yeah.
I Mad Maxed my motorcycle. Not even close. You're getting started, though.
Getting started. Well, I've already been to the range with handguns in the like in the hard cases, and that's nice. Very easy.
Yeah,
but well, a long gun, a little bit harder. Some people are like, oh, that's not inconspicuous, but I don't really know how to wait to make it not inconspicuous. Where then do you hide a long
get
gun?
Get a guitar
on a
case. Put a guitar case in the back.
Well, that's not legal. You can't put guns in a guitar case. That's concealed weapons now.
It's not a guitar case. If there's a gun in it, it's a gun case shaped like a guitar.
You have to put a sticker on it that says guns inside or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Anyways, nah.
This guitar case contains guns.
Just gun boot. Gun boot on the side. Because if I'm out in, gravel roads and lease roads and that kind of thing, and I see a grouse, I want to be able to, like, reach back.
You should fill it with golf clubs and intentionally get pulled over.
That'd be hard, though. I have to speed or something like that because
be
I think
hard to get just, pulled over on a bike. You're not driving it correctly.
Yeah, especially this thing. But just having a gun on the side of a bike is not. I won't get pulled over for that. No, I won't get pulled over for that in Alberta. No one will care.
Welcome to Alberta.
Drive that downtown. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This Saturday I got a PAL course. It's looking pretty full, so it's going to be good. Yeah. And then Sunday, Monday, I'm not sure. I might hit the range. I might go motorbiking looking for grouse and scouting. I might go looking for bear. I'm not sure. Not sure what I might do. But we'll see. Why don't we get into upcoming events?
Yeah.
Just a couple, three gun match. I got everyone, right? Anything else to mention? No? Moving on. Couple more three-gun matches coming up. October 19th, there'll be three-gun at Sherwood Park. And October 26th, there'll be two-gun at Chaz. That's your rifle and pistol, no shotgun. So just a mini match for that one that they rescheduled. Upcoming Maple Seeds. Kelly, do we have any of those?
Yeah, we have a couple that still have spots available. Elmira Rod and Gun Club. It's going to be November 2nd. Now, it's going to be open to the public very soon, I believe. And then we also have Huronia Handgun Club, which is in Penetanguishene, Ontario, November 17th. Sale for those tickets are going on soon. It's still with the club, but I will be releasing it to the public in the very near future. So two events that still have potentially spots to go to this year, and then we're looking at January and February for winter seats. And we'll have those events up soon.
Sweet.
Y'all.
BTSA, there's a USPSA weekend match on Saturday. That's for Tony. It says, I have expectations from Taylor and Mel. We'll see if they do it. I don't know what that means.
I was trying to think about that too. I know they both made Team Canada for PCC Worlds.
That is true. Yeah, I saw that recently here as well. Taylor's going to be team captain.
That's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
What's that?
I was just going to say, we did get an email about an event that's going to be taking place. I plopped it there in the event section.
Perfect.
Verbatim.
Yeah, just getting down there right now.
Yep.
Coming up. If you're in the Edmonton area, we've got a PAL course this Saturday, and the next one will be late November because November and late October is for hunting, so I'm not training anyone. The Cornwall Handgun Club is holding a Charity Steel Challenge match during the weekend of October 26th to 27th to raise funds in support of veterans in preparation for Remembrance Day. So definitely check that out. The match is up on Practice Square, by the way, if you want to get to that one. So that's Cornwall, Ontario area, if you're interested. The news. BC NDP think gun owners is small, ignorable. Who's that?
That's mine. That's of course it's mine.
NDP.
The BC NDP are the same as the federal NDP, by the way. Just that's a whole other thing. David Eby, who is our current premier and leader of the BC NDP, believes that gun owners are small and an ignorable group. We are in an election in 2 weeks' time. There's the posted a little CTV thing about it. But anyways, they've also been going pretty hard on throwing us under the bus and misrepresenting John Rustett's stance. He's the running for the conservative leadership for not enforcing federal gun laws, and has turned that into he's not going to enforce any federal gun laws. It's going to be anarchy in the streets. We're not going to be able to arrest criminals who have illegal guns. That's the line, and I'm annoyed. So that's what's going on in the news. Yeah, sorry. Get off my soapbox.
What's the projection looking right like right now?
Oh, they
NDP, it, right?
Oh, so the conservatives are riding the coattails of the federal conservatives. We didn't the Conservative Party hasn't had a seat in years, but just because they exist, and everybody's really tired of the NDP here, yeah. The NDP could legitimately lose. It is a very, very close game. So depending on how it goes, we could end up with a conservative, very, very small majority conservative government in the province of British Columbia, which would be great for us.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have they ever?
Not formed? Since 1970 something.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They haven't had a seat in a decade or two. So.
Wow.
British Columbia. Wow.
Coming up from behind. BC's so much better for it. Wait.
Trevor, we've missed you.
Facebook's banning people for promoting firearms. Beware.
Yeah.
Or not promoting firearms and just mentioning stuff about firearms. Okay, I got a strike. What was that, last week?
Lots
of people are getting them right now. Last week I got nailed for, someone asked how much, I posted some photos of Savage 99s and someone was like, what do those go for these days? I'm like, wow, this price to this price. Boom. Got nailed on that. We've been with Slamfire whenever we link to Bullseye, get nailed on that. So we can't do that anymore.
And they're going retroactive on that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we stopped doing that for a while now.
Oh, yeah, YouTube did the same thing. Hickok was on, and some of the other big channels were on, Demolition Ranch. They have this new policy, but it doesn't just apply to a video I make tomorrow. It applies to videos I made 8 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
And some of those guys have, I have 500 videos. I got to go through those and see, did I promote the firearms or whatever you guys are talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, watch what you post on Facebook, because that stuff's... a couple of the local gun shops have gotten their Facebook pages removed.
Nova Scotia. I just saw that. The one in Halifax, Dartmouth there.
Yeah, I just saw another one today. That was probably the same one. Yeah.
Funding.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting nailed stuff.
Yeah, Dave even got kicked off. He's got a 6-month ban.
Yep.
Yeah. And they won't even tell him what he did.
Why?
Wrong. Yeah.
And he can't appeal it.
Well, he did, but then they got denied.
They said no.
Yeah.
No.
Why I just gave up when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
We moved our Slamfire chat off Facebook because.
Yeah.
Oh, because Dave can't chat with us anymore.
Yeah. There you go.
But also, preemptively.
Yeah.
It's wise. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea. All right. Let's get into new gun stuff. New gun stuff is brought to you by Bullseye North. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR with a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter. Tony has popped a couple of things.
It wasn't Tony. It was.
Oh, you pulled them in.
I the FOC, Reliable, and Cabela's are all mine. Bullseye's might have been Tony.
You're into the Scorpio 44 mag lever action?
Oh, I just don't want that.
Kind of looks cool.
It does.
Yeah. $1,200.
I don't like the top eject, though.
What's that?
Top eject. I don't like the top eject.
Not for anything you want to put a scope on, but.
I mean, yeah. I got both the Winchester and the Marlin.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a scope on either, so I just don't. I don't know. The only scope I ever had on a lever action was my 45-70.
My dad's got one in his BLR. That makes sense to put it on a BLR, though.
Yeah.
But all these other ones in 44 mag and 30-30. Those aren't long range cartridges, anyways.
No.
But I mean, I almost think it takes away from the aesthetic.
Oh, for sure it does. Putting a scope on one of these things.
Oh, yeah.
It takes away from some of the functionality, because when you walk with one of those things, you can walk down a trail with your hand right around the receiver because they're so skinny and it's really comfortable. Can't do it with a scope.
Yeah.
No, even my 4570, I don't have a scope on. I don't like the top eject. That's all.
Cool. The other thing they have on sale, and this is the sale price for these things, the Mossberg 590M 15-round box magazine. They've got it on $210.
$200?
The Mossberg mags for their 590Ms are really expensive.
That is ridiculous.
Okay, so the price gouging aside, because apparently Bullseye thinks you suck and they hate you.
No, is that's that the price of these things.
Is it work? Does it work? Is it reliable?
Yes. I there's two guys at the three gun matches that I go to that run this in open, and it runs.
So in Ipsic, not three gun, Ipsic does a manual division for shotgun. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody know if this would be approved for manual division in shotgun?
I do not believe so. I believe it's still got to be tube fed for the manual division.
All right.
It'd have to be. Yeah. There's such a huge.
If it's got a detachable mag, you're open.
Yeah. Sucks.
Cool.
Yeah, I was doing some window shopping on a couple of places, and I legitimately bought some ammo from Reliable. But if you're in the mood for it, I put on good price things. 33% off Troy Straight Pull and 223, like $1,000. That's not a bad deal.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not going to buy it. I'm just saying it's not a bad deal. Like $1,000 this day and age for a probably functional gun.
Straight pull.
All it's got to do is go bang, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're gonna have a manual action firearm, you're gonna spend $1,000. Get something with walnut and a bigger caliber. If I'm gonna spend $1,000 on a black gun, I'll just add two more thousand and get something. And I'll still go bang, 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 bang.
Fair. Just putting it out there is things that were on sale, man. There's $500 off a Tika T3 Tactical 308. It's still a $2,500 gun. So
yeah.
But then the thing that I did spend some money on, even though I'm the poor, Reliable Gun in Vancouver has $100 off Aguila high velocity brick, like 2,000 rounds. It's like
sweet.
That's an okay price.
38 grain.
Yeah.
It runs well. My gun likes it. So
yeah. Which gun?
One of my 1022s.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But so I bought some of that. I thought it was a good deal. It was like $100 off. So, and it's, you know, it's a lot of ammo. Day at the range. And then for anybody, I thought so. Anybody in the mood for a GSP 16? They're only $400 at Cabela's right now. I sold mine.
What's the capacity on this now? Is it still what it used to be? Or is 110 that
110 rounds.
110, yeah.
110 rounds. So, I mean, they come with the 25 round stick mags, but technically the maximum capacity is the maximum capacity of their biggest magazine.
I got one right here. This is this one, like, my kid likes to use.
Does it run, Adriel?
This one runs fine. Yeah,
they run well. But they just need to be cleaned.
Need to be cleaned.
Mag 22s need to be cleaned. To be fair, 22 ammo is dirty. Interesting.
And
my kid likes it.
That's a cool, fun, viable option. I'd like to just be hunting small game with it to answer questions from FUDs. And by answer questions, I mean I would literally say I don't answer questions and keep walking.
Love it.
My kid hunts small game with it. With that red dot.
As you should.
And then, there is a 33% off non-corrosive. It's Norinco, so take that with a grain of salt, 7.62x39 ammo, which is like an okay price. There was a 34-gun safe with 40% off, and it's kind of cool. And this one I actually found because a director buddy of mine is super into shooting clays. They had 33% off a electric.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was a decent price. He actually bought
it. It is a decent price, man.
Yeah.
And wireless remote.
Exactly.
Wow.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, folks that like to do a lot of clay shooting, I thought maybe that was something that would entertain y'all.
It looks small and compact, right? Probably comes apart a little bit.
Does it say how much it weighs?
Probably. Maybe not.
Oh, no. Oh, you went to right there.
No, there's no way on there. Wireless remote included. Can't just
foot pedal. 15-foot.
Get it with like hey
foot
Google
pedal release
Alexa
cord,
something like that. Hey Alexa, throw a clay. Hey Alexa. Oh, yeah. Be so annoying. Cool.
Yeah. Calling clay.
I don't know if they have any more, but that gun boot that I got, $50 new. Ooh. crazy good pricing. That one didn't come with a rack or any of the stuff, but I don't want it because I'm gonna do the motorbike thing. I'm actually
very interested in this Magpul.
I did some Kydex on it. Magpul, what Magpul?
The Mossberg pump with the mags
on it. The mags are so expensive though.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. Like they're making this is the razor sales going on here because the razor handle costs nothing and the blades are like.
Yeah. This is PressTech Ventures all over again. No, actually, PressTech Ventures kept their mags reasonably priced. It was the ones that were bringing in the actual ones that had bales. Oh,
the Alexander
Arms ones. Were $250 a pop.
I don't remember them being $250 a pop.
Yeah, you're a young kid. You don't know.
Back in my day, the Alexander Arms mags for $250, and that's how we liked it.
See, I was gonna say like Mossberg mags make 2011 mags look cheap,
right?
Yeah, even the MBX ones,
and they're plastic. They're injection molded plastic. No, there's nothing fancy going on there.
But they just decided to make. What do those things cost in the States?
The Mossbergs? I don't know. It's Mossberg, so I don't look at it. But.
Well, sorry. Lots of
more of a Benelli guy than a Mossberg guy. But I don't know. Speaking of, actually, I don't know if you'd use a shotgun for this, but we get to our main topic of moose hunting. Trevor, would you use a shotgun for moose hunting?
Under the right conditions, sure. You could whack a moose with a slug, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you had a rifled slug barrel and a sabo, maybe. Yeah, why not? So moose hunting in New Brunswick. Have any of you ever been moose hunting?
Yes.
No.
Nice.
Dustin, where? How'd it go?
We were up north. I went with a group, and it was an experience. It was. There's more money involved in that than I have any interest in. So I like. They had all of the gear, and we were, I don't know, like 8 hours up north. I didn't actually get to shoot a moose that year, but I cleaned the couple. The one guy shot his like the day we got there. He got stuck helping me, but it was an experience. It was fun.
8 hours up north and lots of gear. Yeah, no, totally different experience. So there are more moose in northern New Brunswick than taxpayers. And it, I hunted really hard. Like, I mean, really hard for 15 minutes. I didn't even finish my morning coffee and my moose was on the ground. At 7 o'clock in the morning, the first photos of us around the moose, most of the guys have a blue can in their hand. I still have my cup of coffee. Get out of the car or get out of the truck at, I took a picture to get a timestamp, and it was 6:23, and the moose was on the ground at 6:59. We get out of the truck, and as soon as it's legal, load up the gun, show up, sling it, coffee in hand. We start walking up the hill. So there's me and Alain. Kelly, you definitely know Alain. I don't think anyone else here does. His wife, Jose, of course, you know her too. She basically runs the club and runs archery or Ipswich, New Brunswick. They've got a group, Kelly, of women only moose hunters. They, when they get
enough eggs,
they do their thing just all on their own. So, I'm making it sound super easy. It's not as easy as that. And Alain kept telling. So by the way, this was my first moose hunt ever and my first moose tag ever. I've been applying. So in New Brunswick, it's a lottery for residents and non-residents alike. It's a lot better than it used to be back in the day. Like in the 80s, if you got it, you had to wait 5 more years before you could apply. There was actually a shooting test, which I wish they would bring back, because guys are inside 100 yards and they're not successful on a moose. Like, they don't go out and sight in their gun. They don't practice with their gun. They panic. Like, this just throughout the few days I was in camp, I heard a couple of stories that just made me scratch my head. And I was hoping I wouldn't hear any of it, but it's still out there. Guys go in unprepared and they waste an animal because they hit it bad and they can't recover it or whatever. So anyway, we get out of the truck. As soon as we start walking, I hear a cow call. Now, I've seen plenty of moose in the wild because I used to be a bear hunter, archery, and a lot of times where I was hunting bear, moose were very plentiful and active, and I would see them on my trail cams and see them in the woods and stuff. But I had never heard a moose call in the woods. And it's a surprising, go figure, it sounds like a hunter calling. So we start walking up the hill, and immediately I hear a cow calling. And I said to Alain, is that actually a cow calling, or is that another hunter? So Alain and the group I was with, they are hardcore, they're professional, they're organized. We were successful because they set us up for success. They have a location, they have cameras, and they usually have a tag or two in camp every year, and they always harvest a moose. It wasn't an accident that I was so successful. So I hear this moose, and I ask Alain, is that a moose or is that somebody calling? And he says, no, man, no one hunts over there. That is the direction of our friend Louise's camp. There's no one hunting over there. You're actually hearing a moose in the wild answering our calls. So, we not answering our calls, because you can't call a moose and we can't call a cow and we're doing a cow call. He had this really cool electronic call that was highly recommended on a New Brunswick Hunters Facebook group. So he went out and he got one, and I think he's going to swear by it now. Because we went back a couple of nights later just to see what we could see. Once we knew no one was going to be using that spot to hunt, we weren't going to interfere with anybody. We went out, and within 15 minutes, there was another cow showed up. So we're walking up the hill. We hear the cow. We're parked at the bottom of a hill. To our right is some woods. As we go up this road, this is a road that's going to take us into a clear cut. So there's a lot of forestry operation going on, and they'll cut a section 300 meters, put in a road, do another big clear cut 300 meters wide, put in a road. And that's to get the timber out of the cut to the trucks that take it out. So when they clear these big areas and create these clear cuts, every 300 meters is a road. So we were on the road, and the clear cut to our right was where he was hunting. There's a lot of these people have camps in the woods, and they communicate with each other, and they say, you know, I'm in this section, I'm on the old 14 mile, I'm on the old 21 mile, and it's kind of a community, and most of them work together. Some of them try and fuck each other over. They'll go into your spot because they think it should be their spot, and they'll launch a few rounds in the air to scare everything out. Like, some people are dicks for sure, but for the most part, it's a community and they do work together. So we're walking up the hill. I hear a second cow. I'm like, this is getting exciting. When we get to the top of the hill, again, still got my coffee in my hand, but I've got cargo pants on. So I put my coffee in my coffee cup holster, I called it, put it down on my left side. Alain directs me to go off of the road into the cut. He said, walk in there and just wait until you can actually see him. Because at this point, the bull is coming. He's grunting. He's grunted twice. He's like on a string coming to Alain's call. So I step off the wood into the cut. Alain does the same thing, but there's a large clump of bushes between us. So I kind of have a visual on him if I need to, but I'm more focused on the direction that I think the bull is coming. So I actually feel my heart beating in my stomach, not in my chest. First time that's ever happened. That was kind of weird. And I got over that real fast. It was like, you know, concentrate, focus what you're doing. I thought the moose was going to step out 10 yards in front of me. I thought this thing was going to come crashing right out in front of me, this young, stupid, horny bull in the rut. But that's not what happened. I hear to my left, on the road, a Lango, Trevor, come here. I turn. He's already on a knee. He's already shouldered his rifle. So I kind of walk out kind of quick, but kind of trying to be quiet at the same time. I immediately drop down to one knee with him, and I look down the road, and what I figure is 100 yards. It turned out to be I stepped it off from where I ejected the brass, went to the moose, walked back, found the brass, and then stepped it off, and it was like between 94 and 100 yards. Mm-hmm. So I see the moose. He's kind of stepping on the road. I think I've got enough. Like, I'm pretty confident it's a moose. It's 100, and I know this gun, and it's actually my ammunition, which is really cool. When I bought this rifle, I did a bunch of testing. It loved 165. It loved IMR 4064. So I tailored up. I did some ladder testing, and I found a nice, accurate, but yet fast round. And so I said to him, like, do I shoot it? Because, you know, if it's brown, it's down. I'm not a trophy hunter. I wanted a big cow or a small bull, because I'm about the meat. I'd rather have 350 pounds of meat shared between four guys than 500 pounds of meat that is not fit to eat. And you got to turn it all into burger and sausage because it's an old bull and it's tough and he's all full of testosterone and fighting and stuff. So I was happy with what we got. I asked if I should shoot because I didn't know if you wanted him to come out on the road a little bit more, because his hindquarters were still kind of down. I'll call it a ditch. It wasn't much of a ditch. But anyway, I had the rib cage forward, so I held off a little bit behind his shoulder. I hit him a little higher than I had expected. It was definitely in the lungs, but higher up in the lungs than I thought. And he immediately just caved right where he stood. And people who have heard me on Slamfire over the years have heard my rant about too much caliber. There are guys in New Brunswick buying rifles that are suitable for shooting elk in Alberta. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's an ego thing, if it's a macho thing. They're buying 300 short mags. They're buying 270 short mags. They're buying 300 Win Mags. Now, a 300 Win Mag, maybe. I can, like, if I was going to own anything other than 30.6 for New Brunswick, it would be a 300 Win Mag. The first deer I ever shot was a 150-pound doe. I shot her with a 300 Win Mag. Cheap Remington Core-Lock bullet, 150 grains, knocked her completely off of her feet. She flipped, landed on her back. I saw her legs kick. I was like, that's awesome. One and done. She gets up and runs. I'm like, I just shot you with a 300 Win Mag, bitch. What are you doing? What the fuck are you doing? You're 15 yards piled up. So I was pretty surprised by that. And the bullet was actually in the hide on the opposite side. The side where the bullet impacted.
Yeah.
What's that, Adriel?
Dumped all the energy inside.
Yeah, it sure did. The side that the bullet impacted her broke five ribs clean across the top, like somebody hit her with a 4x4 or a baseball bat. It was amazing. So the moose dropped exactly where it was standing, which you would think be a good thing, right? Dropped right on the road. Nope. The moose was actually in the way. We had to pull it off of the road to get the truck up to turn it around. So, again, these guys are professionals. They had a huge one-ton, as Sean, shout to Sean, one-ton Dodge truck with a flatbed and a winch.
Oh, good.
They knew that my back was screwed up, my kidney was screwed up, and I shouldn't be doing anything except drinking and shooting. Not at the same time, to be clear.
Well, you got to put the drink down.
Yeah, well, yes. I wasn't even done. Like I said, man, Hefe, I wasn't even done my coffee. They're having a beer at 7 o'clock in the morning. I shit you not, and I'm still trying to finish my first coffee. I'm committed. I have a bad caffeine addiction. So figured it out. It was 15 minutes after we left the truck. Like when it was good to go, walked up the hill 15 minutes, we had this moose on the ground. And like he said many, many times, like, dude, don't get the wrong idea, man. It doesn't always go like this. And I didn't want to jinx it, but I knew it was going to go like that. I knew it was going to go like that. They got cameras. They got salt licks. They have the respect of the other hunters in the community to kind of stay out of that area. And I was seeing multiple pictures throughout the summer and August, you know, late summer, early September, of moose coming in out of that area. So there was no way we weren't going to connect. So, 30.6. I don't understand why New Brunswickers think they need more. This is not like, oh, there's no replacement for displacement. I don't know if it's like if you're compensating for a small penis or what, but I don't know. The 30-06 has been around since 1906. We've got new bullet construction. We've got new powders. You can hot rod a 30-06, and it's more than capable to take down any animal in New Brunswick, any distance. Most of the moose in New Brunswick for the smarter, more ethical hunters are taken inside of 100. There will be shots at 300. Absolutely. Because if I'm standing on that road and the moose is on the tree line and it's a clear cut, well, it's a 300 meter clear cut because that's how the forestry companies around here do them. You can check it with a rangefinder if it makes you feel better. But those in the know from the road to the tree line is 300 meters. Take that shot if you've got the right gun and the skills and you know your equipment is good. And I would have no problem with this setup taking a shot at 300. Hopefully it would still drop right on the spot. Maybe not. I don't know. But I loved how this guy just completely dropped where he was. We never found the bullet when we were cleaning. So there was some debate about, oh, well, it didn't retain enough of its mass and it blew apart and then this and that. All I know is the moose dropped instantly with one shot. So you can talk about whether or not it retained its mass or it came apart or whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah.
Right? Who cares? One and done. Boom. Let's go eat. So, yeah, speaking of eating, that night we had heart. I destroyed the heart.
Destroyed it.
Huh? Yeah. So the moose, right, was, I shot him, but he wasn't dying fast enough for me. And like, listen, guys, I love animals, but I also love eating animals. So I have no problem with hunting, but I absolutely cannot stomach seeing an animal suffer. Was he suffering? No, I shot him in the lungs. He was dying, but he wasn't dying fast enough for me. Like, he looked at us and he lifted his head and he brought his front hoofs up and I was like, hurry up and die. It's killing me. So he wasn't dying fast enough. So I was like, I'm putting another one in him, man. I don't care. I want this. Oh, I want any suffering he's going through to be done. So I walk around. Honest to God, by the time I walked around and was ready to shoot him, he had probably already passed. But I don't, you know, I put one into him. And I thought I was holding high enough that I was for sure going to just put it in his lungs. Nope. Destroy the top of the heart on my mercy shot. Yeah. So the more I land drank, the more dramatic this story retelling was. By the end, I was in tears. I couldn't stomach the moose dying. And oh, my God. He told that story like 42 times. And every time, like, it just got worse and worse for me. So... yeah, that's pretty much it. It was an incredible experience. The timing worked out really well. I was like, yeah, all right, I'll share something. So, I have cancer. And it's all good. It's going to be fine. So I've been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for the call for surgery. And the surgery was supposed to happen and fuck up my moose season. And literally when the surgery was supposed to happen months ago and it hasn't happened. And I got tired of waiting and I called the office. And I was like, what's going on? I was told 6 to 8 weeks. And the secretary's like, yeah, sorry. I don't know why he told you that. You're not going to see the inside of an OR till September. I went, oh, pump the brake, big shoots. September doesn't work for me. I don't care about the, you know. And she's like, what's the problem? I was like, I'm starting a new job. And I've got a moose tag. So we're going to have to deal with this cancer thing after that. She's like, I don't care.
The new job with the moose tag. Of course, the moose tag.
Yeah.
Right? So here. I'm like, well, September, October, tomato. Like, what's the, you know, we can push this by 3 weeks or whatever. She's like, Well, I'll ask him, but I know he's going to say no. Like, he wants to do this as soon as possible. I'm like, well, bullshit, because he told me 6 to 8 weeks, and that was supposed to be July, so I don't believe you.
Yeah.
So anyway, then I just stopped calling. I was like, please don't call me. Please don't call me. The fucking Monday before I left for hunting. The Friday. I was supposed to leave on Monday. And that Friday, I was in training, and the phone rings, and it's Dr. Sitlin's office, and I just step out. I showed it to my supervisor. I'm like, I got to take this. So anyway, she's like, October 24th. I'm like, are you available? I'm like, fuck, yeah, I'll make myself available so we can do this thing. So anyway, I was really hoping that I could get the hunt in and not have to worry about finishing the hunt and then going to get, like, surgery to have possibly a kidney removed. So, I was glad to get the moose killed in the first 15 minutes because, frankly, I just got the news about the operation, so I wasn't, like, in the best headspace. So, yeah, could have screwed some shit up, so... luckily it didn't. And the moose is still hanging at the, so this is cool. So we got to, they did, like, this is not Toronto kids. All right. Like, the moose hunters around here, this is a culture, and it's mostly a Francophone thing. There are some Anglophones that hunt, but north of Miramichi, like, if you don't speak French, you're the second class citizen. And yeah, they take this shit real serious. So the radio station, the French radio station, interviews the hunters. So most of you, I don't know about the new guys, but Kelly and Adriel know that I speak French. And so I did an interview about my moose hunt in French on the radio. And that was kind of hilarious because there were French people that know me who didn't know I speak French. And they were like, I was so confused. It sounded like you. And I wasn't sure if it was you. And then they gave your name at the end. It was like, he speaks French and he shoots moose. So we were the first, no, hold on. We were the seventh moose registered, the third to be interviewed on the radio. And they immediately hand you a hat and a free pizza, like a coupon for free pizza. And then your name goes into a draw for a bunch of serious prizes, gun safe, I think. There's a stand-up deep freeze, like thousands and thousands of dollars worth of prizes that local businesses donate. It's taken very seriously around here. I had no idea just how serious. And we were the first at the butcher. We actually went to there's the butcher shop, and then there's the place where they take the moose, which is kind of an offsite location owned by the same company. So we went there. There was nobody there. We went to the regular butcher shop, and they're like, what? Like, already? So we were the first at the butcher shop. So it's turn and burn, right? The more moose they cut, yeah, the more money they make. So they're not hanging these things. They skin. We got the gold package. Skin this bitch, cut it, and vacuum pack it, please. And we didn't, like, with only 350 pounds of meat, we said, just turn the premium cuts into steaks and the rest burger and sausage. And we told them the flavor of sausage we want. So burger, right? You can just do all the things, the sauces, yeah, the chilies, the burritos, the tacos, whatever, right? So we said, forget about it. Stick it in the back of the cooler and walk away. We're going back into the woods. Let it hang. And we shot the moose on September 20, standby. What was?
You sent me a picture. I can find it.
September 24th. We shot the moose September 24th, and the butcher hasn't called yet. So for people who aren't big game hunters and maybe are not aware, letting your meat hang ages it, and what that really means is it's starting to decompose. The meat is breaking down, and when the meat breaks down, that's when it gets tender. So it's obviously a controlled. You're not leaving it hang outside when it's 25 degrees out. It's in a cooler, but it's still breaking down. The muscle fibers are decomposing. They're breaking down, and that's what gives you nice, tender meat. So even though it's a small bull, we still ask that it be hung for as long as possible before you cut it. So it should be really, really good meat.
Nice.
And then I was a little OCD about, come on, guys, let's, we'll party later. We'll celebrate later. This is now it's time to work. There's three of us gotten this thing out at once. Me and Alain and Jose were all in there up to our elbows. I was dipping my hand in the blood and I was baptizing people in the name of the Moose and the Father and the Prelate. And I had blood all over my face. It was awesome. So, yeah, but it was not as hot as the week before, but it was still kind of warm. Like we always seem to get this weird heat wave that happens in during moose season in New Brunswick. So if you want your meat to be good, you got to knock that hide off as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Get that thing as cool as you can, as quickly as you can. So I'm OCD about skinning my animal as soon as possible. So I knew we weren't going to skin it. And the butcher was going to skin it after lunch because by the time we got it to the butcher, it was 12 o'clock. So the sooner we could get it to him, the sooner it would be skinned. So,
yeah. You guys didn't gut it then? You just took it?
No, we got it. Oh, you got it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no, we got it in instantly and took, I mean, it's got a big-ass liver, so we left some of the liver behind. We just took enough that we were going to have that night.
It's and, so much.
And the heart. Oh, it's so much. It's not a calf liver. So I hate liver. And I hated this even more. Like I couldn't even, some people, oh, I can't get past the texture. Well, the texture and the taste are both garbage. Like I put one bite in my mouth, chewed it up. And once the flavor hit me, I literally spit it out and rinsed my mouth out with scotch as one does. The heart was okay. I don't want to say that it was overcooked because I don't know, but I felt like it was maybe a little overcooked. Like maybe it was a little tough.
Heart's tough. Like it's hard to cook.
Well, I mean, it's a muscle that never stops flexing.
Right? That's why I like throwing the heart on the smoker. Do it low and slow.
Smoked that would make sense.
Oh, I haven't tried that. I've done like fried, like breaded and fried.
Moose heart stuffed with rice and mushrooms, everything. Put that on the smoker for a few hours. Yeah.
Huh. Nice. Nice.
This whole conversation is making me hungry.
Right. I wasn't crazy about it. It is like some people talk about, they can't wait to eat their deer heart or their moose heart. And I'm like,
yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I would have been happier cutting the tenderloins out and taking those back to the camp. So yeah, guys, any questions?
Sounds like your friends had a choice spot and put a moose in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds awesome.
It really was.
I do have one question. You said 300 pounds of meat. What was it? What was that with the bone in? Like what did it weigh on the hook?
So don't know what it weighed on the hook, but when we walked up to the moose, I said to Alain, how much meat are we going to get out of this? He said about 350. When you bring it to DNR and register it, they actually have a measurement they take of the muzzle that is a formula to how much meat you're going to get. So while I was registering the moose, when I came out, he said, yeah, based on the measurement, you're going to get 350 pounds of meat. I'm like, Alain already told me. He didn't use a measuring tape either. So that's not field dressed weight. That's meat in the freezer weight.
That's awesome.
We're going to divide that by four. Alain's got his team, right? So there's Alain and Boogie, Ronald, but they call him Boogie, and Sean and Alain. So, but then we also had Jose with us and Sean's kid with us. So we had a team. And look, it's crazy the amount of people back there. This would have been Wednesday night. Yeah. I think Wednesday or Tuesday night. I can't remember if it was the night I was drinking or the, like I only drank one night. I got to keep the alcohol down. So at one time there was about six trucks stopped in front of the camp and I stopped counting people at 25. Just hanging out in the woods on the road in front of the Lance camp. At like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, somebody was driving by with their moose and they stopped and get out and another truck stops and they get out and they start talking and I'm not me, man. I'm like, I'll talk after I get my moose hung. But I'm a little OCD about it. So yeah,
I'm the same way. I down a deer, something like that. I want to get after it, mm-hmm. get that skin off, get the guts out, and mm-hmm. get it hanging, and then I can crack
have
it.
A beer.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I like doing the deer things. You can do it yourself. Like, you know, it's the same thing. Like, sounds a little bit simpler there, but there's still winches and vehicles that are required. It's a multi-person effort to take an animal that size. Mm. And
yeah, at least two people if you're doing a deer or a bear. I've never shot a bear yet that I didn't take out of the woods by myself. Is that true? No, my first one we took out two. I guess there's two that I took out by myself, and I just tied a rope around. I cleaned them on the spot and then tied a rope around their neck and pulled them to the car. I remember one time the kids at school were doing a bottle drive, and I was hunting. It was a Saturday, and as I drove by with this dead bear tied to the back of a 1991 Chevrolet Lumina on the trunk, the kids were like, "There's Mr. Furlong, he got his bear." I love where I live, you know. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Is that your first moose?
That was my first tag and my first moose.
Nice. Congratulations.
I got all the big game in New Brunswick. Multiple bear, but only one deer and only one moose. The deer was supposed to be with the bow, but we just couldn't put it together. So in the end, the deer story is cool because it was the first year for nuisance tags for apple orchard farmers. It was the first year we had Sunday hunting, and it was a doe. So those are three kind of rare things for New Brunswick hunting.
Nice.
Yeah, the apple orchard operators, they contact DNR. They come on the property. They take a survey based on how many deer they see during their survey and how much damage is happening to your apple trees. They will give you an allotment of tags, and you get to decide what happens with the tags. Three of them went to three individuals that we all knew each other. And the other three went to individuals that didn't know each other or us, and they were amateurs, and they didn't know what they were doing, and they screwed up our hunts a couple of times. Awful. No concept whatsoever. Literally walking through the apple orchard with a bow and arrow, thinking that a deer is going to like stay there. They pushed deer past us a couple of times. In the end, we ended up going to a far part of the property where we were legal distance, use a rifle, and just whacked a deer at 88 yards from one side of the field to the other.
Nice.
And that was amazing meat because A, it was a doe, and B, she was eating apples and soybeans. Oh, yeah.
Apple flavored meat.
Yep. It was amazing. Best deer I ever had. So I wanted a cow moose again, because a big fat cow is going to have better meat than an old crusty bull. So it was either a big fat cow or a small bull. Would I have passed on a big bull if that's what showed up on the first day? No, probably not.
No.
You know, it's not, you know, it just what happens if you never see another one. And that happened to my buddy Kevin, who's got a camp not far from Alanis. He was not guiding, but like he was like it was somebody who's not a hunter who applied and got a license, and so he was taking them around. He may have been the second shooter. I don't know, but they passed on a couple of moose because he's like, she wants a big bull. She thinks it's shopping. Like, she may not see a big bull, right? A big bull in New Brunswick, like a big bull in New Brunswick is 60 plus. We got a lot of 50 to 55 walking around, but there are some 60-inch bulls here.
Just for our listeners, what is that inch? Is that height? Is that...
No, that's a good question. So it's measuring the width of the rack. I don't know what point on each pan that they measure from, but it's the width of the rack from tip to tip at some point on the rack. Like a bull moose can have, you know, 20 plus actual points. When we talk about a buck, we say a 6-point buck, an 8-point buck, a 12-point buck, whatever. Bull points get up into the 20s, right? So, like Alaska and the Yukon, they have humongous racks, but the body of the moose is not any bigger than New Brunswick, and New Brunswick moose tend to be like quite large.
Yeah. I have a non-moose related question. What do you do with your bear meat? Because I got a bear tag and I got a spot where I know there's going to be bear. What do you do with your bear meat?
I only hunt spring bear because I eat them. And the reason why I eat spring bear is because they wake up and they have no fat on them. Why is Wagyu beef so good?
Because it's got fat
in it. The fat marbling.
So all meat, the flavor is affected by the fat, and in bear, in a negative way.
Yep.
So you want a spring bear, because if you're going to eat it, you want a spring bear because there's little to no fat on it. So you don't have to trim and trim and trim and trim and trim and trim and trim. Cleaning, it's easy. When you clean the fall bear, oh my God, it's inches and inches of fat between the fur and the actual meat of the bear. And you're constantly trimming and trimming and trimming.
So
yeah, and again, like,
I'm gonna be shooting a fall bear.
Yeah,
it's on it's on an oats field though.
That's not
a dump bear.
No, you don't
need a dump bear.
They are what they eat for sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Like
my fall bear, Adriel, I did up. Yeah. I got the hams cured, and then did up the rest in sausage. The cured hams, it tastes just like ham.
Yep. Absolutely. If you serve a pork roast and a bear roast, if it wasn't for the color, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. I mean, visually, the fiber of the muscle is just like a pig's muscle. It's long, it's stringy. I never got anything cured though, Hefe. What I would do is, I used to debone my own, but that's a lot of work. So then I would start to take it to the butcher, and I never do steak. I only did roast, burger, and sausage. And the roast, I would put it in a slow cooker with a pack of onion soup mix, allspice or some kind of spice. I can't forget. I don't remember what it was. Salt and pepper, onion soup mix, and that's it. And then you have a hot bear roast, and then bear and mustard sandwiches for days after.
So your sausage meat, did you mix that with beef at all?
Pork fat.
Pork fat? Okay, yeah. So... under the recommendation of the butcher, mine was early season, I didn't have whether to hang it myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm like you, I like hanging my meat for at least 7 days.
I never hung the bears, though.
No?
No. I get them frozen and frozen fast to kill any trichinosis that's in the meat.
That'll only work some of the time, I've heard.
Yeah. And then
you got to just cook it fully.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no eating your bear medium.
But the butcher's recommended, especially for first one, do like 15% beef meat.
Really? Interesting.
Yep. So you got a little bit more sausage, and it took kind of like the tartness from the bear meat. And
interesting. I never had any tartness flavor in the sausage whatsoever. There's another year I did pepperoni. There's a guy here who does sausage and pepperoni and stuff like that, and he goes to the farmer's market, and I brought him some of the roasts, and he turned it into pepperoni, bear pepperoni, and he said it's technically shelf stable, but refrigerated anyway. So
pretty shelf stable. I have some stuff, and if I hang on to like my smoked or jerky or pepperoni, like, you never want to have it too dry, because then it just doesn't taste that good.
Yeah.
But if it's not too dry, if there's moisture in there, there's something for mold to grow on eventually.
Exactly.
So, So keep it cold or keep it super dry. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So now I'm hooked. I hope I get a tag every year. Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah. I'm actually intrigued that you guys can use electronic calls.
Yeah. No one's complained about it yet. Yeah.
We can do it on coyotes in Alberta.
Yeah, but if you're hunting for meat in Alberta, you can't.
No.
Or bait.
For bear, there's only
bear, some places certain you situations bait. You can bait, yeah.
Yeah. I can't bait in the area I'm in, but I've got an oat field that for all intents and purposes is practically bait.
Yeah.
You can't bait deer.
Nope.
No.
No salt licks, no apples, none of that kind of stuff.
Nope.
But interesting. Interesting.
Really cool story.
So you're waiting now. Do you have your freezer cleared up?
Yeah.
You gotta start eat all that shit out of your freezer, man. Well, you need the space.
Since my diagnosis, I went straight carnivore, dropped 25 pounds. When I get on the operating table, I want to be as lean as I can. So, yeah, we get a meat order from a company twice a year. So we got a big stand-up freezer. So I've been doing my best to make room. Don't worry.
If you get some trichinosis or a tapeworm or something like that, that'll help you really lean out too.
Nope. There's a good weight loss plan.
Yeah, I'm good.
Tony's got an interesting question. Coyote meat.
It's been done. Never by
it
me,
has been done.
Yeah,
it's if you could survive off of it, but it's carnivore, so it does not taste good.
Nope.
As the only person on this show who's eaten dog meat before, it's not good meat. I assume none of you have eaten dog. I have.
No. For the listeners who don't know,
I don't know what I ate in Thailand. Maybe there was.
Well, Adriel makes a point of knowing because he has a goal of eating every animal on the planet, and he's got quite a lot of weird ones checked off.
Dog was an accident, though. The first time.
Well,
it was an accident.
Yeah. That's all.
But coyote meat would be even leaner. Like the stuff I had was like farmed dog in China. I'd imagine like that's even fattier than like coyote meat is going to be.
We farm chickens, they farm dogs.
Right around the time COVID hit, I sent China an email. I said, "Dear China, not everything is food." For latte. Like,
"Dear Trevor, you're wrong." Yeah, it's made of meat.
"Dear China, these nuts."
Dog meat's not great. I can't imagine coyote. I'd leave them to unless if the fur price is good, I'll take them to the Hutterites or something like that. We've got some colonies around where I hunt, and
if the choice between starving and not, coyotes, what's for dinner? Like,
yeah. If meat was really expensive, like if we're in the 2030s and all of a sudden meat's like super-dy duper expensive and we can't afford to feed cattle and pigs and all that kind of stuff.
Woodchuck.
Yeah. If I'm eating squirrels, I'm eating coyote because, like, let me tell you, the work that it has to go into skinning a squirrel, like, and eating it, I might as well eat it.
I've watched guys that they just rip that skin off like nothing.
A rabbit. Just peel it off like a glove, like your sock.
I would do the coyote too. If I'm at that point, if I'm eating squirrel, I'm going to eat coyote too. Might as well. Coyotes are a
limited resource too. I'd eat the squirrel before the coyote.
Probably. Same. Probably. But if I'm at that point, coyote's going on the menu too.
Well, whatever my bullet can impact, pretty much.
Yeah. You got to stew that. You can't barbecue it. There's just no fat in it. It's like rabbit. Rabbit's really lean, right?
Yeah.
Except it would taste worse because they're eating garbage and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking about organs, did I tell this story on the show? I don't know if I did. The first time I went out for geese, I got some geese, and then I was talking to a neighbor of ours who's Chinese, and they're like, "Hey, those geese, like, can you get me some?" I'm like, yeah. I got some geese, gave them to her, breasted out, right? I got the guts out and that kind of thing. They're like,
"Dummy.
These are worthless to me.
Yeah.
Do you take those back? Next time, just bring me the whole thing." Okay, great. So I went and got some geese again, brought the whole thing. They gave me back the breast meat. They're like, "Here you go." We used the rest of it. They wanted some like a traditional meal that they had as a kid, and it did not involve the breast meat.
Like if I open up a black bear, I cannot identify the gallbladder, and I'm glad because there is a black bear gallbladder black market.
Black market, yeah, yep.
Like here in the province.
Oh really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Really? I don't know. Guys who do know and outfitters who do know, they'll take them to the back door of some Chinese restaurant in Moncton. Allegedly.
Well, it won't be a restaurant. It'll probably be like a natural.
It's a natural path thing.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd eat coyote, squirrel.
Get it as hard as you want. If it's only 3 inches, it doesn't fucking matter. Just stop. Stop with the tiger paw and shit, people.
Squirrels, I'd eat that. Yeah, I think I'd eat everything in North America.
Skunk?
Raccoon? I'd eat raccoon.
Yeah, trash panda. I don't know if we should eat anything that carries rabies.
Don't they do like a whole bunch of raccoon shooting in your area, Trevor? Like, isn't I thought the raccoon
hunt was... anything that's fur bearing is trapped. That being said, though, Dustin, you may be right, because there is a provision in the regs for night hunting and hunting with dogs, and I think that is for raccoons. It's
raccoons, yeah.
But I don't think anybody actually does it.
Oh, there's a bunch of crazy French Canadians that definitely do that. What are you talking about?
Anybody goes out with a gun at night around New Brunswick, it's for a deer.
And they're crazy.
And they're crazy French Canadians.
Oh, no. Flashlight. Oh, no. A really powerful flashlight. It's the crazy redneck Indians, the ones with the summer teeth.
Somewhere there. Raccoons.
That's it. So do any of you know anything about hunting raccoons? What do you do?
Like, just do them.
No, but the hunting part, you take dogs out?
Dogs, and they chase them.
They train them. Shoot them out of the tree?
Yeah. The same way to hunt a cougar, chase it up a tree, and then talk nice to it. Comes home with you.
Dome it. Yeah. Neat. All right. Okay. That's probably enough about hunting. Well, we were supposed to talk about moose, but we're talking about cougars now and raccoons. And
hey, it's a gun show, and we talked about gun stuff.
Right.
We did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kept the talk to minimum.
You got a gun. You actually have a gun in your hand. We don't know if it's your gun. Like, I don't know. Like,
borrowed.
It's
rented. Rented.
Rented.
Savage Model 111. We went hunting one time, and the only only rifle I had was my Model 700 308 in a TAC-21 chassis. I actually had that with me in the woods. I got the weirdest looks from the FUDs. It was awesome. I would have kept doing it. It was just too god darn heavy. So Muffin and I stopped at Canadian Tire on the way home, and I bought this, and this came with one of those Bushnell scopes or whatever.
Yeah.
All I did, put a rail on it, put this Vortex Viper on it, 4-6 by 16, or 4-16 by 44. It's a TAC driver. I loaded my own ammo for it, found the right load, and I mean, it's a budget gun. Let's face it, it's a Model 111. Like, I think, what would I have paid for this with a scope at the time? $500
package scope.
Yeah.
Probably paid $400. $400 is what they sold for in 2009.
Okay.
That's when I bought mine.
I bought mine right around then too.
I probably paid about $540 for it at the time. Mm-hmm. And then put a scope on that cost much more than the gun. It's a Vortex. I know they've got, you know, spotty reputation, but I still think there are a lot of scope for the money. And I've had like 12 at one time Vortex optics between scopes and red dots. I've never had a glass optic fail. I had the shitty red dots fail, but as far as the scope, always been good.
Yeah.
Warranty's good too.
Yeah, they do have an OBS warranty, which I like.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. We've gone to listener feedback. We've kind of been touching the Facebook feedback as we're going along. Getting into emails. Kyle, we haven't heard from you in a while. Did you want to hit this email here?
Sure. Good evening, Slamfire Radio. Shot a USPSA match over the weekend with 4 classifiers. Felt pretty good about it, but the scores don't lie. I was only able to get an average of 47% remaining in classification C for PCC. Much slower than Kyle. Sorry, I likely would not make it to the live show today. Trevor, I promise I'm not trying to hide away from you. Would love to chat with you about IPSC Classic Division, and you can let me know how bad of an idea it is to buy a Springfield 1911. Good night. Best regards, Tony.
Well, have me back on.
You can tell him now, and then it's like, and he can't defend it.
Would I buy that gun? No.
What would you buy instead? So he's really into 1911s. What would you buy instead that is similar to that for IPSC Classic Division?
Oh, I mean, depending on the budget, either, you know, SVI, Infinity, then STI. You'd have to get I don't know what STI is doing these days with 1911s, but my STI Trojan was just absolutely phenomenal. IPSC pistol, more reliable than any Glock I've ever had, honest to God. Yeah, there's a small list of guns that are gone that I regret, and that getting rid of that, oh, that was dumb. Yeah. That was all the dumb.
Would you get a Norinco 1911 and give it to some seafaring people to tune up and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, that's what I did for my godson. My godson is still rocking his Norinco. So
I still have my Norinco over here, too.
Yeah. Did we put sights on that for you? Did Captain Andy, or both?
He milled out the spot for the red dot.
Right, right. Because Denis and I were taking the Norincos, welding the dovetail, shaping it all, polishing it all, and then cutting a different dovetail for like the Dawson rear adjustable sight for Norincos.
Yeah, because they have some weird sight.
Well, it's a fixed rear sight with like two dots, and then they've got another fixed blade, and mm-hmm. they often are too low for the point of impact for sure 147s, if I remember, but that's going back a ways.
Now I got the red dot on mine. So. Yeah. Cool. All right. We'll have to have you back on for a 1911 show.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah, YouTube.
I went from the biggest 1911 hater, like McClatchy and I were like, Glock, 1911s are garbage. We had a guy on one time to defend 1911s, and I just was trying to eviscerate him. Like, wouldn't even let him get a word in edgewise. I know, hard to believe. I'm like, oh, man, I'm entitled to change my opinion when new information is brought forward and, you know.
Old information.
Fair.
Kyle, do you have YouTube comments up?
I do.
Oh, cool. Do you want to do those?
Yeah. So we got some comments from Tony and Eddie. So on episode 575, Kelly, have you tried Champion Vanquish Pro earmuffs? I bought a pair on sale from SFRC a few years back, and they've worked well for me. It also has Bluetooth connection. I believe the Vanquish Elite has USB rechargeable batteries.
Yeah, no, I never tried them.
I've never even heard of those. Yeah. I've never even seen these before. $220. Hmm. Got some buttons on the side. That looks weird. No, I've never seen anyone running these.
No.
I did get my Swordens on Friday though, so it was right on time for me to take to the range, and they are delightful.
They had the gel cups.
Yeah, they did.
did you feel like your head was in between?
Yes, I did.
Soft? Yeah.
Yes, it was very soft.
Oh, very good, very good. The rumors are true.
I'm with Adriel and Tony. 12 gauge is the only gauge to use. Oh. And next ones are from Tony. First one's on last week's episode, 575. To clarify, IPSC classifier matches and USPSA classifier stages are different things. A USPSA classifier is a standard course of fire with an officially approved stage design, similar to Steel Challenge official stages. You would be able to compare your score across the globe as it is set up and shot exactly to spec. In that case, the consistent 0.2 seconds can make a difference. If you are just comparing to everyone at the same event, then the 0.2 difference is applied to everyone, which will still make a difference, but not as much of one.
And IPSC classifiers were intended to do the same thing. But the IPSC classification system, even when I was super active before lockdowns in IPSC, they were poo-pooed from the top on down. Some people were doing them, some people weren't doing them, because they were maybe not as effective as the USPSA ones. Many provinces were coming up with their own classification system, which I was wholeheartedly against because I could be a B in Alberta and an A in Ontario. It all depends on what they decided to, you know. So
yeah,
you would put your class down for nationals because in nationals you're competing for top prize, but you're also competing within your class. So last time I was classified, I was C. So I went to the nationals in Winnipeg and I registered as C and I beat the guy in second place by 20 points or 20%. And it was kind of like, you sandbagging son of a, what are you out of? So that's when I really had my eyes open to like how crappy the classification system was. I didn't know I was A until somebody said I was A. I thought I was C. So anyway.
You planning on getting back into it, Trevor?
I didn't leave it. Put on a match and I'll go shoot it. Don't be like that. Now, but it's come up. The only thing I'm getting back into, Dustin, like I'm going to archery tournaments. I'm going to IPSC matches. I had been going to indoor IPSC matches once a month with my buddy Captain Andy in Nova Scotia until February 5th, my back went out. I need back surgery on top of everything else. That's how I found out I had cancer because my back went out and they found a tumor when they were scanning my back. So, so when there's a match, so I was like, I could only stand up straight again at the end of May, beginning of June. So that really screwed everything. And then I just was waiting all summer for a phone call for surgery that never came. So anyway, willing to shoot matches, but not willing to become not coordinating this or facilitating that or match directing anything that I've done my time. Unfortunately, I'm getting sucked back into archery. Since I left, no one has filled the role of coach facilitator. I mean, they do have somebody acting as provincial coach and maybe teaching the first level of coaching, but I was certified to facilitate the first four levels. And I was, so there are people that want to get their certification in New Brunswick to be certified archery coaches. And there's nobody to review their portfolio. There's nobody to submit their names to the National Coaching Certification Program, et cetera. So after surgery, the balls have already started to roll for me to do that because archery New Brunswick was, I mean, don't get me wrong, IPSC would, and this podcast was incredible to me too, but archery flew me all over Canada, sent me overseas. I shot for Team Canada. I was a coach for Team Canada. Like, I owe archery a lot, and I can't sit by and let these coaches not get their paperwork because nobody else has had the opportunity to get certified. So I'm going to do that, but that's it.
That's cool.
I swear to God, that's it.
Otherwise, you're going to be tired like Kelly. Kelly's like, all right, end. I want to go to bed.
Well, we got a couple more YouTube comments here from Tony. Talking about third-party shipping. Oh, this is from episode 406. Talking about third-party shipping contractor. Only when I visited my work at Hinton, I found that all the FedEx Express shipments come on an unmarked third-party minivan. But FedEx Ground is still first-party service. Guess what? All my shipments to Hinton are FedEx Ground now. And then he goes all the way back to episode 382. You can't listen back anymore. All the pistols on sale. Not just for sale, on sale.
Oh, how painful that must be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, like, that's it for YouTube.
Every time I drive down to Cabela's in Washington, it's heartbreaking. Like, but it's good. I would be extra poor. Like, I'm poor right now.
You're in the pores, but you would be extra in the pores.
I would be extra.
Living in a mansion, but you're poor.
Yeah.
The film industry, like, got shut down for, like, a year and a half with the strikes and all that stuff. So it's just coming back to life now. So, the days of the six-figure income have stunted for a bit.
So, I understand.
Yeah. But one day I'll be irresponsibly spending money again.
Nice.
It's going to be sooner than you think.
I only do that on days in NY.
Exactly.
I'm about to spend $8,000 on a radio control airplane. How's that for irresponsible?
I'm surprised you never got into like the drone racing.
Not
like,
drones. That's the nerdiest shit ever.
Like, oh my god!
XLB3D printing. That's ridiculous. Come on. That's like the PCC of the RC world.
6 months from now, he's going to have the most expensive I said on.
No, playing with a drone is like masturbating. It's only fun for you, and no one wants to watch.
Awesome. Kyle, is that all our YouTube comments?
Yeah, that's all the YouTube.
Perfect. Thanks to our supporters on Patreon and Player. If you'd like to email the show, send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Finally, shout-outs, podcasts, YouTubes, recommendations, anything?
Bueller.
Bueller. Bueller. Moving on.
Bueller.
Finally, join our Discord server. We're pretty active over there. We got some people doing some stuff over there.
Yeah.
Watch us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and Player. Join the CCFR, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Hey, everybody.
See you next week.
Bye. So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.